Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking Madonna versus Munger, rich renters, and empty promises of passive income.
So the Madonna v. Munger part of our story, part of our episode, makes me think of, was it Deathmatch?
Celebrity Deathmatch.
Okay. You knew exactly where I was going to go.
Claymation.
Claymation, where they take two celebrities and it's just ridiculous.
Honestly, I would watch that, those two going at it.
I feel like Madonna's kind of been more in the news lately. Oh, we talked about, what was the Al Yankovic story?
Weird. Just called Weird.
Weird is the name of the movie, but...
streaming for free on Roku.
A little biopic, and she was certainly featured in that. Not accurately, but we will actually talk about Madonna, though, and her involvement in crypto.
By the way, we're not movie reviewers or anything, but that was a good one worth watching.
It's pretty funny. Yeah. I will say, yeah, Daniel Radcliffe, he did a surprisingly hilarious and good job playing Weird Al. But real quick, let's give a quick plug for missingmoney.com. Again, this is the website where you go and punch in your name, your state, and it'll let you know if there are these assets out there floating around waiting for you to claim them. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned it recently in the newsletter. Listener Hayden, he found $167 for his wife, specifically under her maiden name, from a long-lost PayPal account. And I wanted to mention this because I never thought to search my wife's maiden name.
Yeah. Oh, did you find great riches waiting for her?
I immediately had visions in my head of like just vast sums of money out there, again, just floating around, just waiting for me to pounce. But alas, there's no pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. But for all those out there who have had a name change recently, don't forget about that old name. Look that up as well.
For sure. $167 found money. It's like,
boom.
Yeah, that's not nothing. That's big time.
Yeah, if you saw $167 on the sidewalk, I guarantee you would pick it up.
Yeah, but then you would turn it in because it was probably somebody else's.
If it was just cash, how do you, have we talked about that before?
I would try to locate the person if I could, but I don't know what you do if you can't.
I've multiple times found $20 bills, like at a gas station on the ground. Once I'm walking into a grocery store, I saw $20 lying there before. And I mean, you can stand there for a second and kind of look around and, you know, because I would hate to just pick it up and immediately walk off with it because that feels a little more like you stole it from them.
Yeah.
But beyond that, man, I feel like, cash money that you find on the street fair game.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably right. But I think it's just important. Let's mention the website again, missingmoney.com, because this is
you're more likely going to be able to find money there than at your local gas station.
Well, and you're not stealing from anyone in that case, or potentially stealing, because this is
you're not stealing money if you pick up cash off of the ground.
You might be right.
Unless, you know, old lady walks up to you and just, I lost $50. Have you seen it? And you're just like putting $50 in your pocket.
Nope.
And you're like, no.
That would not be
this
cool.
is now my $50.
Yes.
Not
well,
cool.
But this is actually your money just from, something like a long-lost PayPal account or maybe money from an insurance company that you never claimed, maybe something like
a
that.
A settlement, that never got paid out.
So these are, it's worth at least plugging it in and maybe like, I don't know, see if you can, if you want to be super noble, help your friends find missing money too by plugging in their information. But yeah, Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the Friday flight.
Would you charge them a finder's fee?
No. You just do it out of the goodness of your heart.
Joel's just like, by the way, I can get you this money for a very small fee.
You want the $500 you're owed? I need 10%, right? That's a finder's fee. Well, let's get to the Friday flight articles we found interesting this week. And Matt, let's start off by talking about the Super Bowl for a second. The matchup is set. The Chiefs versus the Eagles.
Okay. I'll have to take your word for it.
Well, I'm not nearly as into sports as I used to be. And so I watched a very small amount of the Chiefs, the ending of the Chiefs game, because my father-in-law, he's a big fan. So he's very excited about this. And I will, I guess, root for the Chiefs in order to make him happy. But
there you go. Always good to do with your father-in-law.
Yeah, but our listeners, they might see something floating around this week about the Super Bowl indicator. And let's talk about what this is, because it has implications for how you might choose to invest. And the thing is, this thing is completely non-scientific, but let's mention what it is. It basically says that if an AFC team wins the Super Bowl, the stock market will decline this year. So that means if the Chiefs were to win the Super Bowl, the stock market would not do so hot in 2023. But if an NFC team, the Eagles, wins, then stocks are going to rise. And I don't know, it sounds kind of like Groundhog Day, Matt, which happened this week to me, where it's like random furry creatures. Are they going to see their shadow or not? And I think, Punxsutawney Phil's prediction status is not all that great, depending on who you believe. It's somewhere between 39 and 60%. But so he's right half the time, right?
Yeah.
And this Super Bowl indicator thing is one of those unscientific things. It might be fun to point to and joke about, but of course, don't make any decisions with your money based on a game. Like, if the Eagles win, don't pour all your money into stocks and vice versa, right? And so long-term investors, we don't care about these types of statistical shenanigans.
We don't care. It might be fun to think about, but I wouldn't put any more weight in that than you would the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah.
Do they still do the Puppy Bowl?
I don't know.
Where they have like a little puppy dog race, whatever. Actually, so
sounds
while
like you're a jam.
I'd rather watch that probably than the actual Super Bowl. But while we're talking about football, another listener reached out to us, Anthony. He sent us an article about former wide receiver Chad Ochocinco.
Formerly Chad Johnson. He changed his name.
To Ochocinco,
yeah,
number 85. So he seems to be one of the few frugal NFL players out there. Although we did have a friend of the show, Brandon Copeland. He came on the podcast. He deserves a little shout out
he
as well.
He seems like 90% of his income. He definitely fits in with Chad.
Oh, yeah.
I bet they'd be pals.
But Chad said in a recent article that he had an 83% savings rate and that he chose to wear fake jewelry. He chose to fly commercial despite the millions that he was making. He actually said that he was happy with a window seat on a Spirit flight. But one of his quotes from that piece was that everybody is caught up in the image and looking a certain way and being rich. It's pointless. And we felt that was worth mentioning because we could not agree more. Although I feel like it's a little conflicting because he says it's pointless, but then he's wearing the fake jewelry. So maybe he's just cheap.
Hey, yeah. I mean, like,
you want to go for the look a little bit, but simultaneously, you don't need to spend go with the lab grown diamonds or the cubic zirconia as opposed to the actual diamonds.
I want a watch, but my watch costs $50 and not $500, right?
Yeah.
So I like it. And I think that there's something that we can learn from a dude like Chad Ochocinco, who's like, screw the appearances, what everyone else is doing. I'm going to do it my own way and make sure that I've got financial freedom, especially in an industry like the NFL, where a lot of players only last for a couple of years. Chad had a longer career than that and made over $50 million, I think, in the NFL. But the fact that he held on to 83% of that's the power play.
That's phenomenal.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, what's crazy is that he didn't need to save 83%.
Sure.
Like, he could have just set aside 2% mm-hmm. of his income.
Or even if he just 10,
it's
right?
still and been a millionaire, yes, as completely. Long as he had that invested in, you know, widely diversified low-cost index fund. But the fact is, most of us aren't in that situation, mm-hmm. and we would encourage you somewhere more than 2%, but maybe not quite 83%. But hey, if you're hitting that 83%, more power to you.
All right, let's keep talking about sports ball-ish related stuff for just a second, Matt. But this one, we'll kind of pivot a little bit towards cryptocurrency, because it seems like almost yesterday that everyone was captivated by Matt Damon's and just like what was his Fortune Favors the Brave, right? His mm-hmm. commercial, or the Larry David.
Seems just like yesterday.
Was Larry David's was an FTX commercial, I think.
Was it really?
I think so.
I forget.
And now FTX, we see what's happened since then. But this was a year ago, right? This was last Super Bowl.
Well, in the Larry David one, wasn't he actually making fun of it?
Kind
like
of,
in,
yeah.
in the commercial. Yeah.
When
so.
You go back and look at it, it's like ironic to the point of like just completely real.
I wonder
if he actually
kind of feels good about it, because he's like I said in the commercial, wouldn't trust it.
Yeah, you should have not looked past what I was saying and just listened to what I was saying on the surface.
And he still got paid.
Right, he did. Well, on that note, should celebrities be held responsible for the crypto endorsements that they made? Because prominent endorsers of different crypto sites and coins are being named as defendants in recent lawsuits. And honestly, the celebrity crypto craze was tough to watch, right? And the courts are going to decide if these individuals will face legal ramifications for their involvement in some of these potential schemes. Some folks, Matt, we've talked about this on the show, like Kim Kardashian, they've already had to pay fines for not disclosing the specifics of their financial interest in specific coins and companies. The same thing's happening to Madonna right now. But if there are laws, I think, that were clearly broken, then whoever broke those laws should be held accountable, and there shouldn't be any free passes just because someone is a celebrity. I hope that should go without saying, but that's how I feel.
That's right. But that raises another problem, another question as well, because the SEC, they haven't made entirely clear which digital assets are governed by what rules, right? And so, you know, like, we're all familiar with crypto. It's been around for a minute. It's been around for years now. It still feels like the Wild West. So we would recommend for folks to proceed with caution if you are considering investing in crypto. And keep in mind, celebrities, they're typically great actors. So don't take their endorsements. Don't take their tweets or their videos as a sign that you should also be investing in what it is that they're pitching. And by the way, I feel like it's worth revisiting crypto, and specifically Bitcoin and Ethereum, because they've been surging in recent weeks after a pretty lengthy period of losses. And we don't really care, because our exposure is incredibly minimal. It's limited to cryptocurrencies. But one thing worth noting is that you can now invest in Bitcoin via different ETFs out there inside your retirement account. And what could go wrong? Well, as we have seen over the past year, pretty much everything can go wrong. And not only is that particular ETF trading at a much lower valuation to the actual value of Bitcoin, but the 2% annual fee adds salt to the wound, right? It adds insult to injury. And there are other ETFs out there as well, but even those they still have expense ratios around 1%, which is more than we would like to see you paying. Again, if you want to invest in crypto, do it with no more than 5% of your overall investment dollars. And here's the Madonna versus Munger part. Charlie Munger, he actually calls for cryptocurrencies to be banned in the U.S. Joel, what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree with Charlie's take, or
do you
disagree?
Let me mention Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, they're best friends and business partners, right? And so, and Charlie Munger is 99 years old and still whip smart. I hope to be that smart when I'm his age, and I just hope to make it that long. But do I agree?
Would you rather be Munger or Buffett? Oh. If that's you and me.
They're both studs. I don't know. I'll take either one. You know, Munger's a little crankier, and so that's probably going to be you. Let's be honest.
You share your point. I'll tell you what I think as far as his thoughts on all out banning it.
When he says that it should be banned,
I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't think I agree with him. Actually, yeah. I think I'd like to see actual regulations take place. But I will say at the same time, I don't know that cryptocurrency is adding much value to our society in any real form or fashion. A lot of people have lost meaningful amounts of money. A lot of scams taking place in that space. Mm-hmm. A lot of pump and dump. And some people are getting rich, but a lot of people are losing money in this space. And so, if it were to be banned, would I shed a bunch of tears? No, I wouldn't. But I still don't think that's probably the best way forward.
I might shed a few tears only because I think it limits our ability to do whatever it is with our money that we are legally allowed to do.
But then we wouldn't legally be allowed to do it.
Well, exactly. Like everything he says about crypto, I pretty much agree with him as far as...
He's called it rat poison. He's said a bunch of bad things
as far as it being so speculative. Like, I get all of that. But simultaneously, does that mean that it should no longer be something that people are allowed to do? There's a lot of things that people can partake in our society, in the U.S. in particular. That's totally allowed. And I don't think that...
Like sports gambling. But that's another thing
right.
where I lean towards maybe outright banning it, too. So we'd probably follow a different...
Yeah. So this is why I guess when you're saying that I'm Munger, that I'm like, whoa, I want to distance myself a little bit from Munger. What's interesting in this piece in the journal, he talks about the Communist Party of China, and he holds them up as, oh, we should be more like China because they've all out banned it. But literally, it's in the name. It's a communist government, and anything that is outside of their control, they don't want to see grow. And so I think there's a lot of things
that... We would be banning it for different reasons.
We'd be... Sure. But bottom line, do we agree with everything that crypto represents? No. But I personally don't think it should necessarily be banned.
Yeah.
Folks should have the option. If they want to partake, they can. If they don't want to... Just skip it all together.
All right. Well, let's just talk about reality for a second because it's not banned. And that was his proposal in the Wall Street Journal this week. Agree or disagree, that's fine. But the truth is, even as Bitcoin's coming back, we might start to see more people interested. We might start to see more speculation. We might start to see more scam attempts in this space. So the advice, as always, from us, since you can take your hard-earned dollars, if you want, and stick them in that space, be very, very careful. Do it with caution and don't do very much.
That's right.
All right. Let's talk about housing for a second, because with the sky high cost of housing, Matt, there was an article in Yahoo, which interesting. I don't find the articles on Yahoo all that often, but this one randomly I found. And it said that even millionaires are choosing to rent these days instead of buy. And stats show that high income folks want to rent instead of buy at a much bigger clip. It's increased something like 84% in the last 5 years. And I don't think this is a bad thing, though, right? Given our country's cult of home ownership, many would say that's stupid. Like, if you have the money, you should be buying a house. This should be where you're investing your dollars. But of course, you and I, we don't agree with that common assertion. There are new stats from Realtor.com which show that renting is still cheaper than monthly payments in 45 of the largest 50 cities in America. And that's not even factoring in how expensive it is to purchase, right? All the acquisition costs of buying a home, the fees that you pay to realtors, and the closing costs. But then also on top of that, maintaining a house, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that's not cheap either.
It's really expensive.
And I think a lot of people, they say renting is throwing away money. That's not true. And if you want to know why we think that, you can go back to episode 476 and check that one out. But it's just important to note, if you're a renter, like, don't despair. I think renting can be the savviest financial move for a lot of people if you're taking those extra dollars and you're funneling them into stock market like investments.
Sure. Yep. And there's also other benefits that come with owning. And so on the other side of the coin, you know, if you are in the market to buy a home, I think that's also fantastic. Just because renting is a solid choice for many folks out there doesn't mean that home ownership isn't a great choice for others, that it may not be a good choice for you. So much depends on your specific circumstances. But just be prepared to make offers and to make sure that you've saved enough money. A new survey by NerdWallet, they find that most Americans are looking to spend somewhere in the $269,000 range on a home. But get this, the median home price is at $381,000. These numbers are not the same.
Yeah, there's not compute necessarily.
There's quite a chasm here. And so just keep in mind, there are always going to be trade-offs when you're looking at homes, when you're looking to buy a home. But just make sure that you're not making a trade-off that gets you maybe the home of your dreams, but then leaves you completely house poor where you're unable to prioritize other crucial financial goals.
Yeah.
There are some expenses where we can sort of work our way back, or we can out-earn certain decisions that we've made. But purchasing a home, a mortgage, I mean, like, you're quite literally talking about the largest purchase you'll ever make.
Yeah.
And so this is one of those mistakes that you could make that has more zeros at the end of it than, you know, the misstep that you made last month.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. You bought a too expensive pair of jeans, you put it on BNPL. That's one mistake. But buying a house that makes your house poor for decades, that's another kind of mistake for sure.
Exactly.
And interestingly enough, Matt, you and I, we've talked about how kind of the housing slowdown, we didn't think it was going to be super long lasting. pricing, and we didn't think that the dip in prices was going to be massive. And a tweet from our friend, Mindy Jensen, who's been on the show before, she's a realtor and she works at Bigger Pockets. She said, is this spring going to be as hot as last spring in real estate? She said, I don't know, but in less than 24 hours, I already have 14 showings on my new listing. It's well-priced and looks great, but both those things help a lot. And it was just interesting to see her take as a realtor, like the spring selling season and buying season starts now, really, in February.
That's right.
And real estate is certainly location dependent. I think some markets are going to be hotter than others, are going to see bounce back more quickly. The markets that soared the highest, like Boise's probably not going to pop in the same way because it popped so hard over the last couple of years. But yeah, we've been saying for months that that these predictions of a housing bust were overblown. And with rates edging back down below 6%, with limited supply and meaningful amounts of pent-up demand, people who still want to buy a home, I expect to see more action in the housing market in the coming months. It'll be kind of interesting to see how that shakes out.
That's right. We only think that the housing prices are going to continue to rise as there is an entire generation of folks who are still looking to buy that first home. But Joel, we've got other additional stories that we're going to get to right after the break, including one we're going to discuss a strategy, a way in which you can reduce your car insurance premiums. We'll get to that plus others right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, let's keep going with the Friday flight. Matt, you're right. We have a story coming up in just a second about how you can cut your car insurance premiums in half. There's like one number associated with that we'll get to in a second.
Ooh, yeah. Nice setup.
Thank you. but let's get to our ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from Bloomberg, and it reads, even on $100,000 plus, more Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And when you dig into the numbers of this story, Matt, the stats show that a full 64% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And of course, that's like waterfall tear emojis coming out of my eyeballs when I read stuff like that. But let's talk about what the term means for a second. And basically, paycheck to paycheck, it means that most people rely completely, wholly on their next paycheck in order to pay bills and make ends meet. That if, like, on Friday, their, you know, bi-monthly paycheck is supposed to hit and it doesn't, they're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they'd be basically up the creek without a paddle. It's important to note that the majority of folks who claim to be living paycheck to paycheck are earning six figures. And that sounds like a really healthy income. But it's also true that because of the inflationary environment we're all living through, it's been even harder to save, that the wages haven't been keeping up with the pace of inflation. And so, yeah, despite difficulties, though, it's hard to imagine that two-thirds of Americans really find themselves in this position, even though that's what the data shows.
Yeah, that's a ton of folks. It also, I think it highlights the fact that more money doesn't necessarily solve all of the world's problems,
yeah,
right? Like, I think there's a lot of folks, again, $100,000, it sounds like a lot of money. And I do think there probably are a number of folks out there who are hearing us talk about this, and they're saying, no, earning six figures, earning $100,000, that would completely change my life.
Yeah.
And while I totally get what you're saying, there are 64% of Americans who've said the exact same thing, but we continue to go, like, we spend our money and we change the definition of what our needs and wants. We hop on that hedonic treadmill and we don't look back.
Well, and some of that 100K plus salary depends on where you live. Like, it goes further in some parts of the country than others.
That's definitely true.
So I get the relative nature of it, but that's still quite a high income no matter where you live. But even in New York City or Los Angeles, I would hope you'd be able to save a little bit of money with an income that fat.
And a long while back in episode 73, we talked about how to escape that paycheck to paycheck life. It is not easy, but we feel that it is so important. We feel that it is definitely worth pursuing. And this also makes me think of a phrase that Jocko Willink, that he uses. He's the
former Navy SEAL,
hardcore kind of dude. but he talks about how discipline equals freedom. It's going to take changing some habits. It's going to take getting more disciplined in order to not be fully dependent on your next paycheck in order to just get by. And of course, you'll want to take a multi-pronged approach, right? Like, start off by tracking your spending. Start off by implementing a budget. It's a good place to start. But then cutting spending, you know, especially on some of those larger recurring items, that is crucial. And then, like we talked about last week, don't stop there. Don't just only look at the different ways that you can cut back, but do consider ways that you can grow your income as well. It might take a minute. It's not going to happen overnight, but we think this is very doable. Start with an initial, maybe a more tangible goal of saving up that initial emergency fund, right? $2,467. Because again, the ability to remove yourself from living paycheck to paycheck is all about having margin in your life. But then let's break down that goal into smaller amounts, right? If you take 2,467, divide that out by 12, you're looking at $206 a month. But then let's take that one step further. Let's break that 206 down, divide that out by 31 days. You're looking at just $7. That, in my mind, is a very doable number. Like, that is a number.
$7 per day that you need
$7 per day.
In order
exactly.
to get to that point over a year where you'd have $2,467 in the bank,
yep.
which is where we want people to be, right? We want them to have at least that. That's the perfect starting point. Most people, if you say, can you find $7 in your budget or find a way to make $7 more in a day, it's doable, right? And I think when you put it like that, when you phrase it like that, it makes it a little more realistic, a little more accessible for a lot of people to say, wait a second, yeah, you're right. I am living paycheck to paycheck right now, but it looks like there's something I can do at least on that front. I can move the needle $7 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you're breaking it. Yeah, breaking it down into those smaller bits,
smaller bites,
allows it to feel like you can accomplish that. And I think, you know, winning slowly on a few fronts makes a whole lot of sense. Like, you can make some of those bigger changes. I talked about my dad, who saved $200 a month just by changing insurance carriers. I mean, he was able to basically save almost his full emergency fund amount over a year with one phone call. And that's the kind of thing, I think, take that approach and try to one up, try to do even more than that, truly, so you can escape the paycheck to paycheck lifestyle sooner. But that stat, it's so disappointing to see 64% of people saying, yeah, I wouldn't be able to make it. We don't want you in that position because it's stressful and it's obviously terrible for when it comes to making long-term financial progress.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about something else, Matt, that is fairly ludicrous in our estimation, and that is bank fees. And this is something else that's, I think, preventing people from making more financial progress. I personally thought checking account fees were mostly a thing of the past, but apparently I live in an online bank bubble that isn't necessarily reality for a lot of people, but it can be. I think that's the thing that's worth mentioning. A recent Bankrate survey found that nearly 30% of Americans still pay fees for the ability to bank with an institution. the average monthly fee is something like that a user pays is something like $24, which equals $288 a year. And that's a lot of money that's being essentially flushed down the toilet, whether it's ATM fees, overdraft fees, or monthly maintenance fees. We hate them all. We don't like fees, and we want you to avoid them completely. And the thing is, it's not all that hard to do. Hitting the easy button really just involves leaving the big banks for a far better online bank. You can, you know, read up. I wrote an article about our favorite online banks and how to make the switch. You can find that at howtomoney.com/bank. But if you are like, oh yeah, I didn't realize I am paying fees every month, that's one of those easy ways to save too, to kind of help get your personal finances back in order. Stop the leaks when it comes to bank fees. Plus, it's your money. Like, there, yeah. Wouldn't you?
Well, you're not receiving anything tangible from that. Like, yes. It's one thing to pay that for something else that you're receiving, but really, you're not getting anything
right
from that. Like, that's the maddening part.
If that's like a round trip flight somewhere cool to visit family or whatever, to take a trip, like, cool. That's great. That's a worthwhile spend. I just don't want it being
do it for that
going out the door and. You know, to pad the salaries of bankers wearing fancy suits.
Exactly. Yeah, and this kind of goes back to what we were just talking about, right? Like, sure, some folks out there are living paycheck to paycheck because they can't bring in enough money despite working multiple jobs. Like, we realize this isn't 100% about folks picking themselves up by their bootstraps. But at the same time, a lot of folks are shooting themselves in the foot. Nearly $300 a year. Like, that is a massive amount of money if you're living on the financial precipice. You know, you can't immediately rectify your financial position with just a single quick move like this. But making these smaller moves, like banking somewhere that's not going to charge you fees for something that you're not receiving, that will add up over time, meaning that more of your money gets to stay in your account.
Yeah. That's huge for sure. All right, let's talk about one other simple way to save. And this is that car insurance story, Matt, that you made mention of. You'll save a ton of money every year by shopping your car insurance around with a new provider. You can do that. A site like Policy Genius can help you out with that. You can also talk to an independent insurance agent who can help you shop around. You do it once and you get to enjoy the savings month after month. But maintaining a solid credit score might be just as important as shopping around, because that can have a massive impact on your insurance premium as well. And so here's how it works. All major insurance providers in all but 4 states check your credit score and they adjust your rate accordingly. There are places like California where it's illegal, right? So they can't check your credit score. But in most other states, these insurance companies are checking your credit score and it's influencing your rate. And insurance site The Zebra reports that the average difference in annual car insurance premiums between folks with a great credit score and those with a poor one was $1,600, which means that people with great credit scores are paying half what people with poor credit scores are paying for car insurance.
It makes a big difference.
Double, man, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And so it's like the hits just keep coming. So it's not just finding ways to save like that, but also pay attention to your credit score, because that's going to have an impact on what you're paying, not just for a mortgage rate, but also for that premium every single month or every single 6 months. You don't need a perfect credit score. We've talked about that before in episode 287, but you do need to make sure your credit score is in good standing, because it's going to affect your finances.
That's right. Yeah. Your FICO score, your credit score, it's more than just an I love debt score, as some folks call it. But Joel, let's talk about passive income, because it is still more of a myth than reality. We talked about that very subject back in episode 353. We're doing a lot of callbacks to previous episodes that we've done, but the Times, they addressed the reality of online influencers making passive income promises around the interwebs this week. And, you know, there's so many lofty pronouncements out there about how much money you're going to be able to make from the comfort of your couch or your armchair. But the reality is far from the truth. It makes me think of a tweet from friend of the show, Cody Sanchez, who we had on to talk about small businesses. But she said, anyone who says owning real estate is passive income has never owned real estate. She's spot on, because the real estate gurus out there, they want you to think that it's easy, and specifically that their expensive course is going to teach you all that you need to know.
Yeah, so you can get set for life with a passive income, working 5 hours a week from your bed, making millions.
Exactly, but there is no magic bullet. We think that by working hard, earning more, growing the gap between what you are earning and what you're spending, and then taking that money that falls there in that gap and investing it regularly and in a fairly boring manner, not in crypto. Do all that and years down the road, you just might have some passive income. Money, it just doesn't flow to folks in an effort-free way like a lot of folks want you to think it does. We want you to put in the work, and we think that you will get there. I think there's a lot of folks too like in the article, they talked about how it seems like it's a lot of millennials who are frustrated that they're not where they would expect to be. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of them were saying that, oh, I feel like I'm not where my parents were. But as I was thinking about that, like, I want everyone out there to imagine the kind of lifestyle that your parents were living when they were your age. Because I would be willing to bet money that you have more luxuries in your life, mm-hmm. that you travel more, that you have a bigger home than your parents did when they were your age.
That's right.
Versus where you are right now.
Yeah. And just the fact that cars have gotten bigger, homes have gotten bigger, and travel's gotten less expensive means that we're just consuming more, but it doesn't feel like we're consuming more.
It doesn't feel like it, but we're just unwilling. I think if you want to wait 20 or 30 years and then say, okay, I will then be able to have or achieve whatever it is that my parents have now, sure. But that's the thing. Consumers, like, we are in such a consumption mentality of having, let's say you are trying to strive to be like your folks. Like, folks aren't willing to wait at all. They want exactly what their parents have right now in this stage of life. And your parents have like an entire generation of working and saving and making smart money moves ahead of you, as opposed to just the immediate, I want it now, I want to have it my way immediately sort of mentality.
Well, I don't want to make it sound like nothing's changed, because I think student loan debt has become a bigger thorn in the side for a lot of young folks. Like, there are challenges that millennials face that their parents didn't face in nearly the same way. But you're right. We also do have more abundance, and we spend differently than our parents did in a lot of ways. And we just don't factor that in because we kind of want it all. And I think that desire really plays into what a lot of these like passive income influencers are selling on the internet. Yep. And you're like, cool. Yeah, no, I do feel behind, and I do want that source of passive income. How do I get it? And so they pay people sometimes big money, or they follow those people in a guru-like fashion. And the truth is, the non-sexy route is what pays off in the end. And that's kind of what we're always talking about here on How to Money. It's not going to be sexy.
Both the income generating and investing part of it, but then also the cutting back part.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's the part that a lot of our generation
overnight. A lot of people want it to happen really quickly.
Right. But the consumption side of it, I feel like, is the area that folks are sometimes unwilling to even consider.
Yeah.
They want to have their cake and eat it too. They just want to see their income grow, as opposed to realizing that, oh man, if I want to achieve certain goals, there are going to be some sacrifices I have to make.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't sound too much like get off my lawn old men, but
it's the Charlie Munger coming out of us.
We're trying to just like live in reality here. And I think it is true. It's important to mention that a lot of these people will take some of that dispensable income that you have when it could have been better used in other places to further your financial progress in more boring ways, but that are actually time tested and, you know, are actually going to help you build wealth over time.
That's right. So,
all right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks who want links to some of the resources that we mentioned, you can find those, as always, up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And also over there on the site at howtomoney.com/credit cards is where you'll find our credit cards tool. There are some fantastic options there that allow you to filter all the different cards out there based on the rewards that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so if that's something that you're looking to optimize, some of those different cashback rewards and some of the different points, especially if you're looking at doing more travel this year, we would recommend that you check that out. howtomoney.com/credit cards.
Yeah, we're actually going to talk about credit cards in detail on Wednesday. And kind of give an optimization strategy, but also just kind of talk about the polarizing climate that currently exists when people talk about credit cards in the personal finance space. So we hope to see you back here then. But Matt, that's going to do it. Everybody have a great weekend. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.